CITR podcast update number 2.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. How much construction has been done?
We haven't had to do any construction, actually. Mostly it was just getting servers to host all of these audio files and then software to be able to deliver the podcast to the listening public.
And where does a satellite fit in then?
There's no plan to use satellites at the moment.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
Right to Play is an international humanitarian organization using sport and play programs to encourage the healthy physical, social, and emotional development of the world's most disadvantaged children. RTP at UBC is run by a team of committed university students who advocate sport for development, and it is the first university chapter of its kind. We want you to get involved. Together, we can educate students about sport for development, help raise money, and teach children here in the Lower Mainland about the importance of sport and a healthy lifestyle. So check us out at www.interchange.ubc.ca/RTPUBC.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. You've landed in Juicebox Radio on 101.9 FM, or maybe you're one of our podcast listeners. However you chose to spend this hour with us,
We're glad to have you. I'm Caroline McGillivray, Juicebox Girl going solo as the lovely Julia Saunders is in Guelph for the next two shows. As Julia is working hard at the conference, I'm really hoping she was able to sneak away and check out the long-awaited Sex and the City that opened this weekend. It was the number one movie in the box office, and it beat out Indiana Jones. And I have to admit, I have seen it three times already. Tonight's show is all about sex in this city. We're going to be talking about sex and dating, and how does film, television, and media affect our dating lives in our culture. And if you'd like to contribute to the conversation, you can give us a call at 604-UBC-CITR. Joining us tonight is dating coach Zach Brauman. Welcome back, Zach.
I beg your pardon?
Welcome back. Come on on.
Thanks, Caroline. I'm not mic'd here. Hold on a second.
And he's just trying to get it. He were just mic'd him.
Okay, wonderful.
Oh, I can hear you now loud and clear. How
are
you?
Thanks, Caroline. I'm great. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We really enjoyed having you last time you were on.
It's my pleasure.
So what have you been up to? Have you seen the movie?
By the movie, you mean Sex and the City?
Of course. What other movie is there?
No, I haven't seen it yet, nor am I very familiar with the show. So I'll be speaking from a position of ignorance if we're talking about the show and the movie tonight. But I can perhaps help illuminate what's going on in the male mind and things like that as far as romantic comedies go.
Well, you've got a lot to say about romantic comedies. Tell us about the book you're working on.
I'm working on a book to help men improve their ability to meet and attract women. And it's called Social Fluency, and it's still a good couple months away from being finished. But the basic premise is that in this day and age, there's a lot of pathologizing. In other words, men feel, and perhaps women feel as well, that there's something wrong with them, that they can't get into a relationship or attract the opposite sex. And the premise of this book is that there's nothing wrong with you. It's simply a skill that you need to learn.
Okay.
And I walk you through the various steps that you need to take to acquire the skill of meeting and attracting women.
And how do you think that works in Vancouver?
How do I think it works in Vancouver? It works, yes, in Vancouver like it works in any other city.
You're mentioning some of the myths in terms of having no men in the city, and that's something that I hear all the time from females in the city. You're mentioning that was something that you hear wherever you're teaching.
Yeah. I got back about a month ago from several cities in the States, and where I did some workshops and some private coaching down there. And no matter where I went, not so much the male-female ratio myth. It was different in different cities, but this impression that the men don't approach enough and that the women are unapproachable was something that everyone felt their hometown was more extreme.
I find that really interesting because I hear friends who go to, say, Las Vegas and say that the guys are a lot more wonderful there, or in California, but you're mentioning California was one of the places that you were not that long ago.
In L.A. and San Francisco, yeah, mm-hmm. And in Santa Barbara, that's what I heard from the women there and from the men that they found it difficult to – they found the women were not approachable. I haven't ever been to Las Vegas, so I can't speak for that, but – people are on vacation in Las Vegas and they're there a lot of the time, they're there to meet. So that might be a different story.
That could be true.
Yeah,
definitely. How do you find romantic comedies affect our relationships in this day and age?
I think that romantic comedies are, and movies and television in general are possibly the most harmful things,
really,
out there in dating and relationships. Yeah, there are a lot of myths that are propagated by TV and movies and popular music. We touched on that last time I was here.
Mm-hmm.
That really, when we're learning social skills, any social skills, we learn by doing, and we learn by modeling others. And it's very rare that you actually watch the courtship process happening in real time. You're more often watching it on TV or movies. And what happens on a television set or in a movie isn't the way things play out in real life. You know, for example, I'd say the biggest problem is that love in on the movies is very much equated to neediness and being out of control.
Okay.
And in fact, that for a man to attract a woman, what you need to do is show her how much you love her by showing her how out of control you are and how much you need her. And as any man who's tried that strategy
ends up with a restraining order.
Yeah, it drives women further away typically at that early stage of dating. I think when you're in a relationship, you want to know, you know, if you've known the person for a while, you want to know that you're loved and appreciated, and that the person, I don't want to say needs you, but that they're, you know, they're planning to be around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But to meet somebody and within a few weeks be telling them, you know, that you can't stop thinking about them, and you made them mixtape, and, you know, you found out what their favorite food was and drove across town to get it for them, doesn't really work in the real world. And even when you figure that out, we're very short on positive models. It's very infrequently that we get to see how it actually works, and it's very hard to tell those from the phonies.
Well, we've got a caller online who wants to speak with you.
So okay.
Let's see. I'm technically challenged, as we all know, so let's see how well we do. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Zach.
Hey.
Hey, Zach. My name is Adam. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. So I have a question for you. It might be a challenge. I didn't mean to interrupt your telecast with the ringer. I didn't think the ringer would be actually on. But anyway.
Neither did I.
So, I have a question. Here's some advice for me.
Okay.
Most guys would probably kind of find their way into, you know, not necessarily committing and, you know, kind of playing the field and so on and so forth. Whereas my problem would be more the opposite, where I'll find a girl and, you know, within 3 or 4 dates, I really like her, but I'd rather, you know, it's summer and so on and so forth, I'd rather, you know, spread it a little thinner, let's say, over, you know, and just kind of play the field instead of falling into one relationship. Do you have any advice as to how, you know, the best way to do that?
Sure. First of all, are you frequently finding yourself in relationships? Is that the problem?
No, but when I do find a girl that I like, it's like, okay, it just kind of defaults into that kind of relationship setting.
That's a good point. I'm glad you used the word default, because that's typically what happens. And one thing that I really try and get across to guys, and they have a real hard time believing me, is that honesty is a huge turn-on for women. Okay? So when you first start dating someone, be very clear about where you're at. I mean, sounds like you're open to a relationship if the right girl comes along, but you're by no means, you know, committed to a girl just because you've been out to dinner or had sex or whatever it is. And what often people do is they start playing relationship, you know, especially once you start having sex with someone, it's just natural to start acting like you're in a relationship. And what happens is, after a bit of time goes by, people find themselves in relationships that they never intended on being in. And then they panic and tell the person that they can't see them anymore, and it creates more drama. And I've talked to a lot of female friends about this, that they just want the guy to be honest and tell them, I'm dating other people, or I want to be dating other people, or, you know, give her some say in the matter. If she feels like she only wants to be having sex with you, if you're not having sex with other women, then that's something you can talk about, and maybe you come to that agreement. But let her have some say in the matter.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
It does. And then, just out of curiosity, I got one question for you. What would be, I don't want to necessarily quote-unquote use the word line, but as like, I don't know what you call yourself, but, you know, the doctor of women, but what's the best line that you've got or that you've used?
You're talking about approaching women now.
Yeah, nah, totally different question. Just out of curiosity.
Sure, yeah. Well, first of all, there's a myth out there, which is that there is a magical thing you can say that's going to, you know, she's going to fall on her back with her legs in the air based on this one phrase. And it's usually more about your body language and your nonverbal communication, your eye contact, the way you speak, and often what guys do when they approach a woman is they signal to her that they're fully expecting her to reject them or to not like them, or they're apologizing for interrupting her. And that's just the wrong way to go about it. And if you have your nonverbal communication in order, walking up and saying, "Hey, what's your name?" or, you know, "What are you doing today?" or, you know, nice socks," whatever it is, anything can work, provided it's delivered in a calm, kind of normal way.
Okay.
That, you sound like you've got food for thought. Have you been trying to approach women in Vancouver, Adam?
No, this was generally out of curiosity, being that, you know, if he's writing a book about it, then he must know what he's doing. I'm just, you know.
That's true, but I'm just asking because the topic is Sex in the City. So are you calling from Vancouver?
Oh, no, I am calling from Vancouver, yeah. I don't know. I'm assuming a UBC. I'm calling you from the UBC ice rink, actually, right now.
Ah, okay. And do you find that women are unapproachable in the city?
No, I find them quite approachable, actually. I've lived in Toronto and LA, and this is definitely a very approachable city. It's almost like a small town where everyone's pretty friendly and kind of on marching to the same beat. So, I don't know, maybe it's the scene I hang out with or whatever, but pretty much everyone, I find them pretty friendly, the women out here.
And
kind of a West Coast approach.
I think because you have that expectation, that's what you get back.
Right.
And again, if you approach with the expectation that someone's going to be really harsh or reject you in a nasty way, then they're more likely to.
Exactly. Well, that's the whole thing with the book, The Secret, isn't it? That
right.
Kind of theme.
No, I don't believe in the secret. I have a rant about The Secret I could go on, but not on this show. But it's more the psychology of it. We signal to people, you know, how we expect to be treated, and people tend to treat us that way. So,
right.
Just back to your question about an opening line. I think part of the myth there is that, you know, yes, there's instant attraction, and I think that first moment is rather important. But the purpose of a line, or what you say when you approach a woman, is just to start a conversation, is to start a dialogue. And the basic attitude that is appropriate, that works, is, you know, you approached her obviously because you thought she was attractive, so it's fine to tell her that, but that you're by no means completely sold on her, and you know, you're not courting her at this point. You're just saying, I thought you were attractive, wanted to say hi, wanted to see if there was anything more there, and you'll find that women are really open to that.
Yeah, but I think you also can, you know, as much as it's your body language, I think you also have to just take a second and look at their body language as well. You know, like you can definitely tell if someone's in a good mood or a bad mood or sociable mood or not just by kind of looking at them for a couple seconds and feeling their vibe out.
Yes and no.
Well,
I mean, I
found that. I mean, I don't really know.
Well, I've approached a lot of women, and I've found that often the most receptive ones are the ones that are, you know, listening to their iPod or on their cell phone or don't look like they want to be approached at that moment at all. And one thing for guys to keep in mind as well is that women are conditioned to reject men right off the bat quite often.
Really?
It's a safe thing. If somebody comes right up to you to kind of, you know, it's the same way I feel about when somebody asks me for change on the street. If they ask me a question, I don't want to get pulled into a conversation. I don't want to encourage the interaction. So I'm not saying all women are discouraging that. But if you get a lukewarm response or a bit of a colder response, just keep going, and you'll find that after about 15 to 20 seconds, some women it takes a bit longer. You'll find this much nicer person underneath.
I find that really interesting because usually people decide within the first 7 seconds whether or not they even consider you in the running, whether or not it's a job interview, whether it's a date, whether it's meeting somebody for the first time. I've been approached direct. I like it, actually, because it means it's a man that can take action, and I find that really sexy personally. And this is coming from me as a woman. But I understand what you're saying, but usually the guys that do approach me and I reject them right away, it's because I don't find them interesting and there's no chemistry. And
no, but sorry to butt in, but I think that there's been times where before you even open your mouth, you know, girls will reject you. You
can
even,
right.
Like, before you even walk up to them and say hello. Whereas, you know, there's been times when they've done that and you kind of, like Zach says, break the shell. And, you know, eventually they see that you're, there's a lot of good, nice guys out there. And they've obviously been, you know, approached by some not such nice guys. And that obviously it would build a shell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the ones that do kind of let you in after 5 or 6 seconds might see that you are actually a good guy, you know, so.
I understand your point, but can I add one more thing? Part of it has to do with pheromones. When you find somebody attractive, you know, when you meet somebody and you just are instinctively drawn to them, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a great relationship, but 10 to 1, biologically, you'd have a really wonderful kid. And let's face it, one of the reasons why we're here is to procreate, and sometimes that's part of it.
Here?
Well, I could get kicked off the show for doing that.
I'm going to run, but thanks, guys.
Thank you very much
for calling. Thanks for calling, Adam. Cheers.
No problem. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. I just want to add something to that that question. I want to make it clear for guys that are approaching women cold during the daytime, or even at bars and clubs and things like that, that part of the equation is that not every woman is going to be attracted to you. You might not be your type. She might be very happily in a relationship. She might be a lesbian. There's, you know, so many. She might be just out of a relationship and not looking for someone. So to a certain extent, it's a numbers game. It's not a matter of, you know, taking 100 shots in the dark and not having anything to back it up, kind of a numbers game.
Mm-hmm.
But not every, you can't attract every single woman. And even I've met some of the people that are like Neil Strauss and some people that are, you know, famous as in the kind of pickup seduction community. Yeah, they get blown off all the time. It's just the way it works. So keep that in mind and don't take it personally.
And would you really, really want to attract every single woman out there? Honestly. I mean, it sounds great in fantasy, but perhaps that's one of those things like in the movies that if there was a movie about that where the man had the Midas touch where he could attract every single woman, I think he'd go a little crazy.
Right. Because then he couldn't eat.
Well, no comment on that. I can think of a lot of ways that could go. On that note, before Adam called, we were talking a lot about the myths and that
yes.
You're saying it was very unhealthy. You're also saying in terms of men with really, really strong approaches, which you see those big, grandiose gestures of romance
mm-hmm.
right in the get-go. Sometimes that is really romantic, but I see what you mean. It's kind of like taking a movie like, say, Sleepless in Seattle, where Tom Hanks is... he's really interesting, and he calls into that radio show. Meg Ryan ends up basically stalking him. If you reverse those roles, that would be a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while, so I don't know if I've seen the whole thing, but here, I'll do a little experiment with you.
What kind of experiment are you?
You were talking about that sometimes the grand romantic gesture is nice, so I'm going to ask you to imagine this grand romantic gesture. This
I
guy
like
coming in.
Romantic gestures.
Okay, so tell me about it. What does he do?
Okay, let's see. A man is walking up to me on the street. He looks at me. I look at him. I look up through my eyelashes and smile at him. So I sent out a signal immediately. He comes up and asks me out for a dinner. I'd say yes.
Oh, okay.
And that'd be really great.
Okay.
And at dinner, I'm trying to think of something really disgustingly romantic. But
yeah, I mean, are you talking about, you know, a stranger bringing you flowers and...
Like the impulse
commercials, exactly.
Yes. I would love that, actually, if a stranger came up to me and gave me flowers.
Perfect. Now, take that same scenario.
And it was somebody I wasn't attracted to. I'd run, I'd scream.
Remove whoever it was
therapy.
You were picturing in that scenario and put in, you know... some guy that you work with or somebody that you're not that attracted to, all of a sudden it's
creepy.
It's creepy, yeah.
It's stalker-like.
Yeah. So rule number one is be handsome.
That's not necessarily true because everybody's perspective of what is handsome is different.
I'm joking, but these romantic qualities are actually great when they're... I'm not actually even talking about a man being physically attractive,
But when he has these other qualities of when he has his own life, when he's independent, when he has, when he know, you know, he knows who he is and he's not going to cling to you, then being romantic is a wonderful thing, you know, and that's what women say they're looking for. That is what they're looking for. But they're also looking for, you know, a man who's aggressive and, you know, some of these other qualities that are sometimes assumed and not voiced.
That's true. I think what's interesting as well, last week we had our show on intimacy. And what was interesting about that was we were talking about, I don't know if you've heard of Tanya Diamond. She's a tantric teacher. And she had a couples workshop that I attended a couple months ago. And what I found interesting about that was one of the common things that women kept asking for was romance and intimacy. Yet when you went around the room and asked every woman and man what they thought the word intimacy meant, each one had a completely different meaning. So it was really interesting. Mm. And even amongst Julia and myself, which we ended up just getting the Wikipedia definition after all that. But it's interesting because each woman has a completely different idea of romance, which there's books like, you know, the five languages of, or the languages of love.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because each woman and each man have different ways of their perception of that.
The way they express it to someone as well as the way they
receive it, and just knowing what your partner likes, what they need, and just trying to talk to them in that way, shape, or form. So how does somebody approach somebody when you have no idea? Is there a way of telling, okay, like looking at me, what type of way I like to be told I'm in love? I'm in love.
No, I don't think there's any way just by looking at someone knowing.
So how could you sweep somebody off? Or is it just kind of a shot in the dark thing like you were suggesting before?
Well, not completely a shot in the dark, but people do tend to be attracted to people who are attracted to them. If you know what I'm saying?
That's true.
And often a man's attraction for a woman will spark her attraction for him.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, as I said, done in a way that's not needy. So I've found that when I approach women, if I'm not really genuinely attracted to her, like sometimes I've approached women who, you know, I think she's cute or whatever, and almost, you know, for practice.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cruel, Zach.
No, it's...
But I've done the same thing.
It's
so
it's a, women, you know, there's an opportunity. Sure, I'll go talk to her, but I'm not, you know, really compelled to.
Yes.
I've found that every time I see a woman and I feel like I have to talk to her, it goes well. Even if she's not available, you know, we'll become friends or I'll see her at another time. But they pick up on the genuineness of the fact that I'm compelled by you and that's why I wanted to come talk to you. So
you think it's worth it even if they are unavailable?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And then they introduce you to all their single friends.
Which is always a wonderful thing.
It's a wonderful
thing. It's a great way to meet people.
Yeah. Just expanding your social circle is, you know, for guys, I don't recommend, you know, approaching another guy in the park if it's not, you know, if he's throwing on a frisbee and you want to, you know, that's fine.
Yes.
But to just run up and say, hey, I saw you walk by and thought you looked like a cool guy and wanted to make friends with you.
I think you might get hit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it might work. Maybe I'll give it a try and I'll let you know how it goes. but meeting people, see it as meeting people. And I'll do that when I'm out. If I'm at a bar or a club, I'll meet lots of guys as well as women because, you know, I love having another cool guy in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think expanding social networking is important for just being really healthy and happy. And we're actually at our break already. Can you believe it?
Wow.
I know. So if you want, you can call back at this time. And we are at UBC CITR. You're listening to Juicebox Radio.
And what's the phone number there, Caroline?
You are so cruel. 604-822-2487. And yes, I have it right, but I have it written down. So I am cheating. And we're going to be back after the break. And we're going to be talking about more sex in this city, getting a little bit more into the stats, how to approach, and a little bit about those myths just a bit more and how we can avoid all that stuff. So when you're ready, and when we're ready, we're going to be right back after this. Like you're putting on a show, a show, and the camera's behind. Click, click, play, flash.
You're beautiful,
and
baby.
And the camera's behind. Click, click, flash.
You're beautiful, baby.
Now I'm feeling like a queen, no love, your eyes on me. My hair is blowing in the wind.
They camera phones whenever I be switching pants. So ultra fabulous. My jeans, they get me crazy. Them boys be yelling out, you're beautiful, baby. I'm so, so crazy.
We're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group.
Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back in the box, the Juice Box. And if you're just tuning in, it's Caroline McGillivray tonight with Zach Brauman, the wonderful dating coach extraordinaire. So tonight we are talking about sex in the city, and in particular, Vancouver City. So before the break, we had a call, and normally we'd have juice berries at this time. I was hoping from the kink community, they called at the beginning of the show before we got on air, that they'd call back at the break, but they haven't called back yet, just to give us the information about their event. And I just checked my email and didn't see anything. But there's lots of stuff coming up for June, which you can check on juiceboxradio.com, and we will tell you a bit more about that. So getting back to Zach, tell us a little bit more about Vancouver. Let's start with the census, because you'd pulled up some really interesting stats today in terms of how many single people there are in Vancouver. That's the 2006 census, isn't it?
Yeah. 2006. We're looking at about 48.5% female to male ratio.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty close to 50-50.
Okay.
So if you look at age 20 to 24 years, there's actually a few more males than there are females.
I'm surprised.
50.1%.
50.1%.
But 25 to 40, it's pretty consistently. Yeah, it's around 48%.
That's impressive. Mm-hmm. It surprised me. Is there anything else about those stats?
No, just it kind of goes along with that myth that
there's not more women in the city than there are men.
There might be. There's a lot of exceptionally beautiful women in Vancouver, so that might be part of the problem.
Although, you know what? There's some really good-looking men in this city. I know when I – and forgive all my friends who are listening who live in Toronto, but I know when I go to Toronto, I don't find as many good-looking men. It's like I keep longing for home because we've got such great, wonderful eye candy in this city.
Mm. Yeah, the male population is – I have great friends, so I guess there are a lot of great guys around, but this is an exceptional city for beautiful women.
For beautiful people, yeah. Just in general. Mm-hmm. It's true.
So that's my census data that I got off the internet, so it must be true.
I think it is. In 2006, it's true anyway, so I'll have to wait for the next one to get any updated remarks and updates and things like that. So tell me, in terms of approaching women in Vancouver, is there any great places to approach them that you found a lot of success and you recommend with clients to try? Or do you kind of go through an analysis in terms of their lifestyle and that sort of thing when you're taking on a new client?
Yeah. I mean, anywhere is good, first of all. The one place that I don't tend to approach is at the gym. But I know a lot of people do go to the gym to meet people, but I find it's I've just found it's not the best environment. But
why?
Anywhere, because you don't want to be afraid of interrupting someone when they're walking down the street. I think that's really important.
Okay.
And in fact, I found the more willing I am to kind of disturb a woman's complacency and interrupt her in the middle of something, the more interested she is.
Hmm.
But when you're actually doing something, you know, that's when you're walking down the street listening to your iPod or something like that. But when you're in the middle of, you know, a set or some reps or something like that, it can be disconcerting. But you know what? Maybe that's I'm certainly open to it. Maybe that's just an arena that I haven't tried things out yet in. So
okay.
I don't want to say it's categorically not a good place to approach. Just
what is I've the approached worst place
to approach?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I was thinking actually, if you wanted to go down, Sex and the City is in theaters right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that would be a great place to go meet women, hang out outside the theater.
I think so.
You know, there is no worst place. I mean, I just mentioned the gym because it's a place that I feel it's not appropriate. But again, if anybody wants to call in and tell me they meet people at the gym all the time and tell me how it works, but I think it's definitely a different. You have to approach differently depending on your environment.
That's true. It depends on the gym, too, and it depends why you're there. If I was going to, say, to a ballet class or something like that, I'm not as approachable because I'm actually focusing on the work. If I go to Fitness World, I know full well I'm going there, and somebody may approach me because I think of it as a meat market in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I always dress up, and I make sure I have makeup on before I go to the gym.
Great. So you're hoping to be approached at the gym. So
yes.
So good. So that's a great place to approach. Yeah, you want to be sensitive to the environment, but at the same time, as I said, don't be afraid to interrupt.
In Vancouver, what type of things can women do to just to appear more approachable to men?
It's really up to the men. I mean, I know I wish I had some great advice for women to appear more approachable, you know, but you know, what women do is they go about their business.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways that I see it is that approaching a woman is a test.
Okay.
In a way.
In what way?
She wants to know whether you have the initiative and you're aggressive enough to approach her. And if you're not, then you're disqualified and she doesn't mind. So she'll walk right by you. But in a sense, you're passing her initial test by approaching her. And I hear the phone.
I hear the phone, too. I'm going to choose to ignore that in terms of that. And it's going to stop in a moment.
Oh, it's not somebody calling the show?
No.
Okay.
It's me being bad because I forgot to turn my cell phone off before the show.
Oh, it's your cell phone.
Julia is going to die because this is on podcast. So In regards to with women, though, I find it really interesting. You've mentioned, A, that there's a lot of beautiful women in Vancouver. I have a lot of friends who are absolutely beautiful, actually myself and Julia included, mm-hmm. which sometimes we're very well-dressed. We look really great. And I find it interesting because my friends that sometimes get approached more are the ones that are not as dolled up, who are not as attractive. Sometimes I get hit on more when I've got no makeup on, I've got my hair in a ponytail, mm-hmm. and I'm wearing sweats. But yet when I'm out with my girlfriends and I'm wearing heels and a short skirt and I'm dolled to the nines, I don't get hit on as much. Mm-hmm. I get looked at a lot, but not actually approached.
That makes sense. Personally, I find, well, people have different tastes. I mean, personally, I find women more attractive wearing jeans and something simple. Rather than, you know, it's nice once in a while to, mm-hmm. to dress up, and it's kind of adds the wow factor when it's an occasional thing, somebody that you know and you see them in a different light. But, you know, I can't speak for all men. I'll approach a woman that's dressed up as much as one that's more casual. But
do you think Vancouver is a more casual town because we tend to be a little bit more outdoorsy? I know a lot of girls like wearing their Lulus. We're Lululemon City. Let's face it; it's from here. We embrace it. It makes
the Lululemon is not stopping men from approaching you. I can tell you that.
Oh no, I think it makes us more approachable. Yeah. But sometimes when we're in stilettos and stockings and short skirts, they look at us a lot and they admire us, but they don't seem to approach very much.
Hmm. Interesting.
Just in general. Although then again, usually when we do that, there's usually about 20 of us all dolled up. So maybe it's like the female invasion coming into a restaurant or to a club and
the
kind of
pack.
Them.
Yeah.
Yes. How would you recommend for men to break through the pack?
Break through the pack. Mm-hmm. You're talking about approaching groups of people as opposed to approaching someone who's by herself.
You got it.
It's basically the same approach, except you want to, well, if you have a group of, say, 20 people, mm-hmm. you're not going to walk in and address all 20 people. People are going to
cluster,
usually in no more than groups of 3-4 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never dealing with, you know, you're never approaching a huge audience. But to just walk in and I just walk in and clink glasses and say, hey, my name's Zach. What's going on tonight? What brought you out? And, you know, see if there's any connection there. And if not, maybe I made a friend or maybe I, you know, made an acquaintance. And as I said, you're just broadening your social circle. So not being afraid to commit to the interaction. And that's one of the things that I really stress with the guys that I'm coaching. If you're tentative, it's not going to go well. Yeah, you pick up on it and you pick up that he's nervous. And that nervous energy gets transferred to you, and mm-hmm. you feel nervous because he's there, and so you interpret that as he's creepy or there must be something dangerous about him that I don't want.
Mm.
Whereas if you fully commit to it, I mean, I haven't been treated harshly in ages approaching random women.
Were you ever approached harshly? You're pretty charming.
Approached?
Well,
was I? Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I've, you know, in the past before I, you know, when I was learning this stuff,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I would approach a woman and maybe feel a little tentative or a little, you know, my mindset wasn't right, and you know, she'll keep walking, and you know, yeah, I've definitely had some. I mean, you can. It's
You're
kind
a
of fun,
guy,
though,
my darling. So,
well, it's about your, as I said, it's about your confidence. Energy, and it's about the your nonverbal communication when you approach, and it really doesn't matter. Looks aren't as important. They're really secondary.
That's true. Do you think that basically the approach should be taught to boys in high school?
Totally.
Really?
Do
you think that should be part of the curriculum Juliana I'm going to work on?
I think that would be fantastic. I think it would be fantastic because nothing about attraction is taught. One of the things, again, I'm putting into this book is that people generally don't think of attraction as something that you have to do as a process. You have to attract someone. All animals have a mating dance. You have to do something to get the attention of the other person. Usually the way that people think of it is, this is who I am, this is my life, and I'm either attractive or I am not to a particular person. And they look at me and they decide whether or not I am, you know, something that they want. But if you recognize that attraction is a process that you can that you can spark and lead somebody through. And a couple things that does, the main one is it really empowers you,
because mm-hmm.
now it's something that's within your control,
okay,
that you can learn and improve on, and not, again, I mean, yeah, some of the students that I work with have, you know, tremendously depressed and until they had the positive experiences of approaching and seeing how easy it can be and getting good reactions,
mm-hmm.
really believed that there was something wrong with them. You know, maybe it's just something about me that is unattractive, that I will never, ever, you know, be able to date the kind of women that I feel I deserve.
Where do you think that comes from?
That
concept, that belief that they're not good enough, they're never going to meet somebody who's good, who's going to love them the way they are deserve to be loved.
It's hard to say. I think it's largely our culture. I mean, we look for, you know, we look for what's wrong and how do I fix it?
Hmm.
And that's what I really want to move away from, that model of there's something wrong with me, I need to fix it. And in fact, the self-help movement is, you know, I've read more self-help books than
I think
anyone I know. But what I found was there was a paradox in getting help, which is that the very act of, you know, in striving to improve yourself reinforces the belief that there's something wrong with you.
Hmm.
And when you're talking about developing confidence, that's actually can be counterproductive. And I'm not saying, you know, don't get into self-help and don't work on improving yourself, because it's something that I'm working on constantly, is evolving to that next level.
And we all should be.
But when you look at it in terms of skills
mm-hmm.
and education versus therapy and, you know, fixing something that's wrong,
mm-hmm.
When I started to do that, my confidence really took off.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've seen it in other men. When I can get them to shift their focus off of what is wrong with me and how do I fix it, to how can I, you know, it'd be the equivalent of going to therapy because you're playing tennis and you keep hitting the ball into the net. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. You just need to learn to hit the ball over the net. And there are ways to do it.
Do you think part of that's because of the media or movies? Does that feel into that something's wrong with us? I know for women,
people
complain a lot in terms of the magazines and things like that. Yet we all go to see Sex and the City, partly because of the clothing. I have to admit that is a big part of it. I've actually seen it 3 times now, and I'm looking forward to seeing it a 4th time because it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's amazing when you get different people watching a movie, what they're actually looking at. If you watch a movie yeah. with my mom, I'll be sitting there watching the, you know, I'll be looking at people's body language or some little subtlety, and my mom will say, I love the color of the curtains on their wall, because she's often decorating. Or, yeah, look at the color of their wall. It really matches the shutters. So we're watching separate movies. Little side note.
I have another question for you.
Sure.
In regards to guys approaching girls, you're mentioning in terms of the grandiose romantic gestures that mm-hmm. to try and avoid those in the first few weeks, you know, just try and get to know them. Would perhaps one of the things I wanted to actually recommend to some of the guys, and perhaps you can comment on this, is recommending to them that perhaps not having major expectations that this is going to be the be-all, end-all, and putting all that massive pressure where it's almost like, I liked how you were describing going to meet people where you might meet a new friend, it might be the love of your life, but you don't know until you open your mouth and talk to somebody when you're doing the approach. Would that be the same as anything, where instead of just thinking of, oh my God, it's this beautiful woman, mm-hmm. and getting stuck, the heart, you know, the clammy mm-hmm. hands, the heart going, and same with the girls too, but just not thinking this is going to be the be-all, end-all, let's just go and chill. Let's have a good time.
That's really a huge part of it, is not getting fixated on wanting a particular outcome with a particular person.
Okay.
And because then you start, your brain starts tracking how well it's going.
Mm.
Am I there? Am I not there? And to have the attitude of, I mean, even in the first, you know, early stages of dating,
mm-hmm.
you know, you go out on a date and you have a great time and everything's fantastic, but doesn't, you know, just send it out in the universe and see if it comes back to you.
Okay.
And one of the things that really helped me when I was working on this, because I was working on the skills and working on my own confidence and,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, was that I made my long-term happiness the goal over any particular outcome with any particular woman.
Nice.
So even if I learn something by, you know, I've got some harsh lessons that I learned, but they were all worth it. And it allowed me to take a step back from getting too attached, you know, in a fantasy kind of a way. And I think there is a real tendency. It's actually been pretty well documented what happens to our brain chemistry when we meet somebody that we're really attracted to. It mirrors obsessive compulsive disorder almost identically, the intrusive thoughts. And it's hard to imagine that person is not the one for you.
Yes.
When you're in that state of mind. But you need to be able to take a step back and say, okay, this is how I feel. This is what my, you know, it's an overwhelming feeling, but how much does it have to do with her, and how much does it have to do with my fantasy of what I'm looking for?
Needs that weren't met in childhood, for example, if you're going to go by Harville Hendrix's work. But
yeah, I'm not familiar with him, but that could be one. I think a large part of it has to do with you know, what really intensifies our emotions is being out of control of somebody emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so often, I'm sure guys are famous for not, you know, not being happy in a relationship and breaking up, and then the girl moves on and the guy's just realizes that she's the one for him. And women usually don't take that guy back because they recognize that it's not them. It's not about her. It's about his feeling out of control emotionally and wanting to fix that. He doesn't know that. To him, he just can't stop thinking about her and thinks that he's messed up. But recognizing that the intensity of your feelings might have a lot to do with just the dynamic that was set up. So stop idealizing her is what I'm saying, and stop idealizing being in a relationship is gonna take you a long way.
Wow. Is there anything that you think is healthy in terms of watching romantic movies that both men and women can learn from them?
Some of them, yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned you had a list of a few that were really healthy ones that people could learn some things from.
There's a couple that, yeah, there's a few, you know, again, getting back to sort of what's usually wrong is what you usually see is that impassioned speeches and, you know, stopping a woman from getting on a plane and telling her that you realize that you need her more than life itself usually ends up with her, you know, them kissing or ending up in a relationship or something like that. And then again, I've never driven to the airport to stop someone from getting on a plane, but certainly I have made impassioned speeches and they just don't tend to work. One movie that I like is Lost in Translation.
It's a great movie.
It's just a fantastic movie. And if you look at the dynamic between Charlotte and Bob, it's playful, it's fun, you know, it's yeah, it's light. Mm-hmm. And you know, he teases her, but in a really kind of fun way. I love that scene where they go to the hospital and you know, he puts her on the wheelchair and tilts it back and she says, "No, don't." That's the kind of thing that, you know, that kind of thing is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And so I like that one, and there's a lot of sexual tension there. And I think a lot of guys have trouble understanding sexual tension, and women love the sexual tension, anticipation.
We love to build it up. We've actually got another caller, so I'm just going to put them on. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, hi. I agree with the sexual tension thing.
Yes, we do.
Who are we talking to?
This guy said to me that he thought that the reason I didn't like him was sexual tension, and I kept saying no.
Wait, sorry, what is your name?
Actually, Violet.
Violet, okay.
Yeah, and it seems that being a player is a fashion right now, because, I don't know, like, being promiscuous seems, I don't know, maybe it is the media, but it just seems like it just appears that way to me. I don't know why.
What you're saying is that sleeping with multiple partners or not committing to a relationship seems to be in fashion these days?
Yeah, I think it's the media. Like, I really, because it happened to me. I became promiscuous, and you know, and I totally regret it. Like, I wish I was, like, you know, a nun or something now. Because, you know, I don't know if it worked out in the end, but...
Right.
Well, what did you learn from it?
That really it's better to be single and work on what's important to you. And, and then when you're really feeling ready, the right person will come along and you'll click with them. But it has to be mutual and it can't be forced, but it can't be, like you say, obsessive compulsive, because I was like that. With my ex-boyfriend.
Right, yeah. And, it's a terrible
feeling.
And
I think he was, too. And But I, at the same time, I kind of am still kind of a daydreamer, where I think, oh, well, maybe there is such thing as true love, and maybe the fact that we were so obsessed was, like, you know, like a real, those real romantic movies with the teenagers where it's your first lover.
Well, that's what you're talking about. It's taking that feeling of being out of control as evidence that it's something real and deeper. And in fact, love has nothing to do with that. And that's what I see again and again in on TV and in the movies is I'm so unable to control myself. I'm so invested in this fantasy. That means it must be real. And, you know, it prolongs the pain, I think.
Yeah.
That's why they call it crushes, though, don't they?
Learn that the hard way.
Yeah.
You were saying something about dating multiple people. What was I going to say? Well, certainly not for everybody. I mean, I think the important thing is some people can't. Some people need to date people one at a time, and that's fine.
You can do serial monogamy. The other thing is when a woman has an orgasm and is having sex with a partner, even if you think it's casual, a lot of times we do get emotionally attached because the body releases a chemical called or a hormone called oxytocin, which basically is what Julie and I dub the cuddle hormone, which just makes you want to cuddle afterwards, which knocks guys out because their body's actually at the point of ejaculation actually produces 10 times the amount we do, but they've got testosterone, which combats that a little bit. So they just basically fall asleep afterwards most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is that sex
I think I'm
sex
more like
bonds
a guy,
people.
That's what I'm like.
Do you fall asleep after sex?
Yeah.
I do too, actually, sometimes. Well, thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Violet.
Have a good night.
Yeah,
you too.
Bye
bye. Actually, I was going to say one more thing. Whoops. As I technical challenge there. Going full circle around in terms of having sex with a lot of people, one thing I do like about the movie Sex and the City and the series is, I know you're not totally familiar with it, but there's a character named Samantha, which Kim Cattrall, who's from BC, who's fabulous, plays Samantha. I love the fact that she's so sexual. She's like a guy stereotypically in that way, where she loves to sleep with people. And what I like about it is that came out after the huge AIDS scare, which I still fully endorse. Please use condoms, have safe sex when you're having sex. But she brought the joy back into having sex, where there wasn't the shame or the guilt attached to it, at least for her. And I think that's really lovely.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. One thing that I try and get across to guys, and I'm sure you can back me up here, is women love sex, and women are craving good sex. I think it's not as clear, you know, when you first men, if they find a woman attractive physically, they think it's going to be good sex, but women need to know a little bit more about the man's character. But men have this idea that men want to get sex from women and women give sex to men. And it's a really messed up dynamic. One, I'm sure you're familiar with the book, My Secret Garden, which is women's sexual fantasies. And I've read part of it myself, and I recommend to my students that they read it just to understand that women are waiting for this guy to come along and give them fantastic sex. They want that to happen. So you're on the same team here. You're on the same side.
We do, but at the same time, I also want to add one more thing to that, is women, we shouldn't put all that pressure on guys either to make us have an orgasm. You have to take that time and get to know yourself as well and figure out what it is. But yes, women do like sex. one of the things I do like, again, going back to Sex and the City, is the fact that every female I know talks about sex just as much, if not more, than most guys I know. And there's this big misconception out there that women are these nice, light, polite things that don't necessarily talk about sex and don't have sex-positive conversations and things. And yet I find when people are in long-term relationships, it's the woman that wants sex more.
Yeah.
Give or take, whether or not there's children yet or not.
I like to talk to my female friends about it, especially, you know, girls I'm dating. There was one girl I dated who very, sweet girl, and very, to meet her, she's very, I don't want to say, she was very kind of proper.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I pretty much am thinking about sex pretty much all the time.
It's true.
And I really want guys to understand that if you can understand what a woman wants and give it to her, I'm not talking about just when you're having sex, but the characteristics that she's looking for, a man that will take control, you know, a man that's aggressive, that knows what he wants, that isn't going to, you know, ask her permission to kiss her or things like that.
Not that guys should go around sexually abusing women or sexually assaulting them.
Yeah,
but
just
a fine line
just as a disclaimer here. Yeah,
but yes, we do like the gorilla syndrome, as Daniel Packard talks about.
Yeah, a girl I dated, she's a great friend of mine now, said, "I just want a guy to throw me over his shoulder and drag me to his cave." Most men are intimidated by her because she's very she's got a very strong character, and she's just looking for a caveman.
And I hope she finds that caveman.
I hope she finds that caveman.
Zach, thank you so much. And
thanks,
where
Zach,
can people talk to you if they want to get a hold of you and take classes or anything?
Right. I'll give out my Gmail address. That would be the best way. It's Zed, my first initial, Broman, my last name, Browman.
I'm sorry, I've been mispronouncing that all night.
That's all right.
So that was Broman at gmail.com?
Yeah, it's got a W in it, Browman. So zbroman@gmail.com if anybody has any questions. I love to hear from guys and women and give out advice. So please feel free to write to me with your questions.
And thank you very much.
Thanks,
up
Caroline.
Next is, oh, you're welcome, Hans Klaus's Misery Hour. Marion has the most amazing sexy voice, and I'm so sorry we're starting late with that. He has hot music, and he has the best shoes in the world, which just give me shoegasms all the time. But he's going to be guiding you into the wee hours of the morning. And if you have any questions or comments about Juicebox, you can email me at caroline@juiceboxradio.com. I'm going to be back next week with the lovely Malaika Millions talking about coming out, and that's going to be at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Julia's favorite thing.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio.